Hello everyone, this is Fraser, welcoming you back to another episode of the History of Scotland podcast. Look, I know, it's been a while, hasn't it? I took a short sabbatical from the podcasting world, spending a few months away to recharge my historical batteries, brush off those cobwebs of the past, and come back with a renowned vigour for our shared journey through Scotland's rich history. I hope you've all been well and are ready to dive back into our historical adventure. But before we take the plunge into today's episode, let's rewind a bit and revisit where we've been in our previous episodes. The last time we were together, we were delving into the rule of Malcolm III, a king whose reign was nothing short of transformative for Scotland. This was a man who wore the crown during one of the most tumultuous periods in Scottish history, as a young nation grappled with a changing world and its place within it. Malcolm's reign, as we explored, was marked by nearly constant conflict, primarily with England, and his relationship with William Rufus. His wars weren't just about territory, they were about identity, the question of what it was meant to be a Scottish king, and indeed what it meant to be Scotland. Even as he fought to protect his realm, and sometimes invade England, he was also wrestling with the question of what direction Scotland would take in a rapidly changing world. Alongside Malcolm, as we know, we examined the life of his queen, Saint Margaret of Scotland. A woman of deep faith, Margaret was a guiding light in a turbulent time. Her piety and commitment to religious reform left an indelible mark on Scotland. From her charitable works to the religious reforms she chaperoned, Margaret sought to bring Scotland closer to the broader Christian world, transforming the spiritual landscape of the nation. And then, of course, after this, we joined the legions of Crusaders on their perilous journey to the Holy Land as part of the First Crusade. While Scotland was not the epicentre of this seismic event, it did send its sons to fight and die in far-off lands. We trace a journey of some of these brave souls of the First Crusade as he ventured far from home, drawn by faith, and sometimes greed, to the promise of eternal salvation. Or personal gain, depends how you view it. We saw how the Crusade, though a world away, reverberated back to Scotland, affecting its politics, culture, and religion going forward. Now, back from our hiatus and ready to embark on another chapter in Scotland's story, we turn our gaze to a new era, a time shaped by the reign of a man whose influence still resonates in Scotland's historical consciousness, King Alexander I. We obviously touched upon Duncan II versus Donald III, and then we went through the short reign of Edgar, King of Scotland. But now it's time to jump into Alexander I's reign, whose reign was genuinely quite small as Edgar's, but let's jump in nevertheless. Let's prepare to step back into the world of 12th century Scotland, where we'll walk alongside Alexander as we explore his life, his rule, and Scotland he helped shape. Alexander I, also known as the Fierce, was born around 1078 AD, the fourth son of King Malcolm III and his saintly wife Margaret. His place of birth isn't definitely known, but it was likely Dunfermline in Fife, which was a major royal residence during Malcolm's reign. Alexander's upbringing under the religiously pious environment set by his mother provided him with a unique perspective on kingship, one that intertwined with the ecclesiastical duties and obligations. His early life was also significantly influenced by the political turmoil of his time, especially the wars his father fought against the English. Alexander came to the throne in 1107 AD, following the death of his brother, King Edgar. However, the ascent to power wasn't as straightforward as one might expect. Edgar, on his deathbed, had divided the kingdom between Alexander and his younger brother, David. And yes, this is our future David I of England, one of my favourite Scottish kings, as you know. While Alexander was made king, he only ruled over the area north of the River Forth, with David ruling the southern lands as the kind of junior king. This unusual arrangement could have led to strife and division, just like we've seen in the past episodes with Donald and Duncan and all the previous internal family fighting and struggle for power. But Alexander and David managed to maintain a strong relationship throughout their concurrent reigns. This division of the kingdom influenced Alexander's reign significantly. He wasn't just battling external forces, he also had to continually assert his power within his kingdom against any who would undermine him. His rule was marked by the relentless reinforcement of royal authority. The nickname The Fierce wasn't for nothing. It's believed to have come from his tough and unyielding approach to ruling his kingdom. Though Alexander's reign was primarily characterized by his fervent commitment to consolidating and expanding his power, he wasn't solely a warrior king. He was also a deeply religious man, following in his mother's devout footsteps. A key part of his legacy was his impact on the Scottish Church, particularly his efforts to expand and reform it. Alexander's most notable achievement was his successful establishment of the Bishopric of St. Andrews, further strengthening the link between the Scottish Crown and the Church. The consolidation of Alexander's reign, his impact on Scotland during his rule, his personal life, and his eventual demise form crucial parts of his historical image, even to this day. Despite all the previous challenges we've just mentioned, Alexander proved to be an assertive and determined ruler. He ruled with an iron fist, implementing strict laws and maintaining strong control over his territories. His reign was largely peaceful, save for the occasional skirmishes with the Norwegians in the Western Isles and the rebellious elements in Moray, a northern region of Scotland where Macbeth obviously came from, and we touched upon that in our earlier episodes. His rule wasn't solely characterised by the military exploits as we know though, and the stern governance Alexander followed in his mother's footsteps with his fervent dedication to the church helped him establish St. Andrews and solidify the ecclesiastical status of the town. Alexander's fervour for the church reform also led to the foundation of several monastic houses, fostering literacy and education within Scotland. Now, let's revisit Dunfermline Abbey. Founded by his parents, Malcolm III and St. Margaret, the abbey served as a prominent religious and royal site. Several Scottish monarchs, including Alexander himself, were laid to rest within its grounds, signifying its importance in Scotland's royal and religious history. On the personal front, however, Alexander's marriage to Sibylla, an illegitimate daughter of Henry I of England, served as a diplomatic function, keeping peace with England. This is something Henry I did quite a lot, using his kids as a way of political leverage in his politics. But to be honest, that's kind of how medieval society functioned as well. The couple had no children, setting the stage for a succession crisis upon Alexander's death in 1124. Alexander's reign left a mixed legacy. While some regard him as a strong ruler who maintained the sovereignty of his realm and implemented significant ecclesiastical reforms, others view him as a harsh and overly stern ruler. Alexander's young brother, David, was not just a figure in the background. As Prince of the Cumbrians, he had significant territorial holdings. His influence was felt in Scotland's cultural transformation as he brought Anglo-Norman manners, culture, and political ideas that he'd absorbed during his time at the English court. While Alexander was still the king, David built relationships with the powerful Anglo-Norman aristocracy and started implementing changes in his lands. Changes that would later culminate in the Davidonian Revolution, and that's something we will journey into in the reign of David I, where we'll witness his vital role in reshaping Scotland's identity and kingship. The ecclesiastical figures during Alexander's reign also had a profound influence. Bishop Turgot of St. Andrews was not just a spiritual leader, he was the bridge between the old Celtic Church and the newer Roman practices. As Queen Margaret's confessor and biographer, he facilitated her canonization, establishing her as a symbol of piety, which was a critical part of cultural and religious transformation that was happening in Scotland during that time. His strained relationship with Alexander, however, marked a tension between secular and religious authorities, a theme that will reappear in the reign of David I, and something that in English history we know with Thomas Becket. Robert, the succeeding Bishop of St Andrews, was of Anglo-Norman origin. His appointment and continuation of Turgot's work is a testament to the influence of the Anglo-Norman culture on the Scottish Church. He would continue to serve during David I's reign, further integrating continental practices into the Scottish Church and negotiating the balance between church and state. In the secular realm, Alexander's reign saw the rise of several influential noble families. Among these were the de Brus family from Normandy. Robert de Brus, a close ally of David I, enjoyed favour and power. With the lands they were granted in Annandale, they established themselves as key players in Scottish politics, a position they would retain and expand upon in the subsequent reign of David I. Somerled, or Sawley, Lord of Argyll, Connaught and the Western Isles, is another key figure. His rise to power began under Alexander's reign. While his major conflicts and successes happened post-Alexander, his descendants, the MacDonalds, would leave an indelible mark on Scottish history, as we all know, during the Bruce becoming King of Scotland and the MacDonalds' relationship with Robert de Bruce. Somerled's power would grow under David I furthermore, and he's a character who we'll jump into in the next few episodes when we cover David I in key detail. We'll chronicle his life from birth to death. But let's not forget about a certain Gospatric, Earl of Dunbar. A critical figure in the defence of the southeastern part of Scotland, Gospatric's family formed a bulwark against English aggression. His family would continue to serve this role under David I, and again, someone who we'll jump into great detail about. These figures lived, served and shaped Scotland during Alexander I's reign. As we move into David I, they won't vanish, instead they will continue to English-Scottish history. We're finally getting to the time where we can start telling the story of not just the Scottish king, but his lords, his earls, who all serve him in his reign. Their legacies intertwining with Scotland's history, their stories evolving and their impacts resonating through time. We will enrich our explanation of David I's reign and the transformation of Scotland through their eyes, not just David's. Now, if we look back to the politics of the country at this particular time, we know Alexander's marriage kept an amicable relationship with England during a period of relative peace. Yet this relationship did not insulate Scotland entirely from the political turmoil and shifting power dynamics of Europe. Scotland had to skillfully navigate these geopolitical waters to maintain its independence and sovereignty. Culturally, the court of Alexander I was increasingly influenced by the Anglo-Norman settlers, who brought with them new customs, traditions, and ideas. Feudalism began to take root, transforming governance, landholding practices, and social structures. This marked the beginning of a gradual but profound cultural shift within Scotland. Thus, we began to see a change in how the realm of Scotland was governed, from the king to his lords to the lonely settler who lived, breathed, and died in the lands of Scotland. This change in people who were migrating into Scotland at this period of time, this is truly where we see the change of the old Celtic Kingdom of Alba, in terms of the people that were being ruled upon, to the now Norman Anglo settlers that were coming from England at this period of time. Religiously, Alexander continued the work of his mother, St. Margaret, as we know, aligning the Scottish Church with the Roman Catholicism, moving away from the older Celtic traditions that Scotland became familiar with during the Kingdom of Alba. St. Andrews emerged as the spiritual heart of the country, playing a crucial role in the religious life of Scotland. These dramatic changes occurring within Scotland inevitably led to political manoeuvrings. The lack of an heir from Alexander's union with Sibylla opened up the field for potential contenders for the throne, leading to a time of political instability known as the Anarchy. During Alexander's reign, Scotland was a patchwork of territories, including the traditional heartland of Scotland and the recently incorporated regions of Lothian and Strathclyde. Despite the cultural shift towards Anglo-Norman norms, the Gaelic clans remained a powerful force north of Scotland, their influence reaching far beyond their territories in the Highlands and Islands. For example, Moray was a key stronghold of the clans, and this is why there was continuous, let's say, bad blood between the Kingdom of Scotland and the land around Moray and whoever ruled Moray at that particular moment in time. As I mentioned earlier, Alexander's strategic marriage to Sibylla, a daughter of Henry I of England, ensured a cordial relation between the two nations. However, Scotland's position in the broader European sphere was precarious and subject to the shifting allegiances and conflicts of its neighbours. One key aspect we've already covered, which is the Anglo-Norman culture and traditions of the Scottish court. The Normans, originally from northern France as we know, had become a dominant force in England after the Norman Conquest in 1066, and as we've seen during that entire time, it affected Scotland. As the 12th century progressed, many of these Normans and Anglo-Normans began to settle in Scotland, and at often the invitation of the Scottish kings themselves, who were keen to modernise their realm and strengthen their grip over the distant parts of their kingdom, trying to, as we know, get rid of the clans and put in a lordship style kingship. So this means we would have lords and earls and not clans with clan leaders. These settlers brought with them their language, culture and social norms, which gradually permeated the Scottish society. The most significant part of this, as we know, was the introduction of feudalism, a societal structure where the king granted lands known as fiefs to his most trusted men, the nobles and knights. In return, these vassals would provide military service to the king. This system, though it increased the central power of the king, also brought a degree of fragmentation, as powerful local lords enjoyed considerable autonomy on their own lands. But this was slightly better than the clan structure, which the clans were local leaders in themselves, and as we know, they really influenced who would be king next, who would rule, who would have say in the court. So getting rid of this clan structure of clan leaders having so much power to more localized lords was a tiny bit better, but also quite similar, as you can see. Really, it's a bit of a name change, culture change, but in terms of who held the power, still the king held power, but his retinue, his knights, his vassals, they would still hold sway, just similar to how the clans back during the Kingdom of Alba's days would hold sway over the king as well. During Alexander's reign, the Scottish Church was undergoing significant changes, continuing the work of his mother, as we know, St. Margaret. He made sure to align all his practices as best he could to the new Scottish Church, which was the Roman Catholic Church, following Roman Catholic traditions from Rome, and not the Gaelic Church, which was actually influenced from Ireland and had taken hold in the Kingdom of Alba. And we obviously covered the Christian rise during the Kingdom of Alba, during the Picts, the missionaries that were sent across. We covered those in an earlier episode, but they were all very rough Gaelic practices. Now we are seeing a very strong Scottish church take hold in the Kingdom of Scotland. At the time of Alexander's death in 1124 AD, Scotland was facing a significant succession crisis. Given that Alexander did not have a direct heir, his younger brother David emerged as the most likely contender for the throne. However, the process was fraught with tension and potential for conflict. Some nobles, especially those in the more distant regions, who were more clan leaders, were keen to assert their independence, leading to a period of political instability that would last for several decades. Despite all the changes and challenges under Alexander's rule, Scotland was a collection of different cultures within different various territories, from the heartland of Scotland to the recently incorporated regions in Strathclyde. The Anglo-Norman culture was gaining prominence. Gaelic-speaking communities, particularly in the Highlands and Islands, maintained their distinct identity and influence. This culture diversity is a testament to Scotland's complex and rich history during this period. Scotland's foreign relations in the 12th century were significantly influenced by the dynamics of power among its larger neighbours. We have already covered Scotland and the marriage tie that Alexander made, keeping both kingdoms within a nice, peacefully, brotherly relationship. The relationship between the kingdoms was not merely dynastic, though, but also involved trade and diplomacy. Scottish wool, for instance, was in high demand in the English market, while England provided a gateway for Scotland to trade with the European continent. France was another significant country in Scotland's foreign relations during this era. Scottish kings, including Alexander, traced their ancestry to the French province of Brittany, which partly influenced the affinity towards France. Additionally, France served as a counterbalance to England's influence, an important factor considering the constant geopolitical competition in the region. Scottish nobility, much like their English counterparts, admired and imitated the French culture, language, and courtly norms. This such influence extended beyond the court into broader Scottish society, evident in the emerging Scottish feudal system modelled on the Norman feudal order. Scotland's relationship with the Kingdom of Norway was fraught with tension, mainly due to the competing claims over the Western Isles. These islands, lying between Scotland and Ireland, were under the influence of both the Gaelic lords and the Norse kings. The exact nature of these relationships varied over time, swinging between conflict and cooperation. The maritime trade routes along the Western Isles were crucial, with commodities like fish, timber and furs exchanged among Scotland, Norway and Ireland. In terms of the relationships with the wider Europe, the Scottish Church played a significant role in this. The Church had connections with the papacy in Rome and various monastic orders across Europe. These ties helped Scotland to stay updated with the religious, intellectual and cultural developments in Europe. Diplomatic complexities of the period were challenging, but also provided opportunities for Scotland. Alexander, with his strategic alliances and diplomatic manoeuvres, managed to steer the kingdom towards growth and stability, despite the constant threat of upheaval. He strived to balance the need for strong foreign relationships with the preservation of Scotland's distinct identity. This period hence laid much of the groundwork for Scotland's evolving position in medieval Europe. Now, the contemporary chroniclers of Alexander I painted him in varying lights. Alred of Rennell, an English chronicler who spent his time in the Scottish court, often emphasised Alexander's reign and religious fervour. His portrayal of Alexander as a highly religious leader was likely influenced by the king's evident dedication to the church. This took the form of substantial contributions to the monastic houses and an unwavering commitment to religious reform. Alexander's zeal earned him the moniker Alexander the Fierce from Alred, reflecting the force with which he protected Christianity and changed the Scottish Church for what he considered was the better. Now, a man we have heard already, but a man who we'll continue to hear from, John of Thorndon, a 14th century Scottish chronicler, also referred to Alexander as the Fierce, suggesting the king's determination and sometimes forceful approach to maintaining control over his kingdom. Thorndon's writings highlight how Alexander managed to quell rebellions and dissent in regions such as Moray and the Western Isles. Thorndon, being from a later period, viewed Alexander's actions from the perspective of a unified Scotland, giving us an insight into the historical evolution and evaluation of Alexander's reign. Moving on to the more recent historians, William Skene, a 19th century historian, critiqued Alexander's decision to divide Scotland with his brother, David, a move he viewed as detrimental to the unity of the Scottish kingdom. Skene, writing in a period when the conception of national national unity was paramount, saw Alexander's division as a historical misstep, even if arguably, as we said at the start, that was more Edgar and less Alexander's decision. But, you know, Alexander could have reconquered the lands and brought David into the fold a bit better. But he didn't, and maybe David I wouldn't have been as strong of a king if this would have been the case. Maybe David I would have died. Maybe David I would have been exiled if Alexander did any of this. And if that was the case and David I didn't come to the throne in the way he did, Scotland would have been worse for it, and Scotland would have been 10 times different than it was today. Modern historians, however, tend to provide a more balanced and nuanced interpretation. Richard Orme, a leading authority on medieval Scotland, underlines Alexander's significant contributions to the Scottish Church in his book Domination and Lordship, Scotland, 1070 to 1230. He acknowledges the king's efforts to modernise and consolidate his realm in the face of numerous internal and external challenges. And I really would recommend reading that book. It's something I want to try and recommend more of, and it's a book that I have now read. And The Domination and Lordship of Scotland during the 1070s to 1230. That book, brilliant. Really highly recommend it. So much is told. So much history. It's explained in a very simple but expanded upon way where anyone can really read it and understand the points that Richard is trying to make. Another popular modern historian at this time was Michael Lynch, and he pointed out how Alexander successfully navigated the complexities of his era in his work Scotland, A New History. Lynch credits Alexander for introducing Norman societal structures to Scotland and skillfully negotiating with powerful neighbours such as England and France. But David I was more the person to introduce the broader Norman change, but we'll cover that in the Davidonian Revolution. G.W.S. Barrow, in his influential work Kingship and Unity, Scotland 10,000 to 1306, illuminates the broader cultural and societal implications of Alexander's reign. He argues that Alexander's reign marked a key period in Scotland's transformation from the predominantly Gaelic society to one more closely aligned with the Anglo-Norman and European norms. Something that we explained earlier on in this episode, and something whilst when I've personally read through that book, really is something I'm starting to see take hold now. The Gaelic society is in the past and is only really being held by the clans in the north, and the Anglo-Norman and European norms are taking a strong hold in South Scotland, but more importantly in the kingship of Scotland. Thus, Alexander I's image has evolved over time, influenced by the perspectives and priorities of various chroniclers and historians. Each person brings a unique lens to view Alexander's reign, allowing us to understand the nature of his rule and his lasting impact on Scottish history. And again, I really would recommend reading the following books: Kingship and Unity, Scotland 1000 to 1306, Scotland, A New History by Michael Lynch, and Domination and Lordship, Scotland 1070 to 1230 by Richard Orme. These are all books I'm going to be using for the next future kings, David I, etc., all the way leading up to Robert de Bruce. So I really would recommend giving them a read if you want further information on Scotland during these times. I personally would declare Alexander's rule a success, which helped lead Scotland into what I would call Scotland's golden age under David I, one of my favourite Scottish rulers for the long-time listeners out there. He was capable and he did lead Scotland down the reform path, which, to be honest, all really led and began with his mother and father. But rather than turn Scotland around the other way and go back to the Gaelic roots, he carried on their reforms, bringing Scotland in line with more the European model of kingship. He carried out these reforms in his name. I genuinely believe he turned Scotland out for the better. And even if the tribal Gaelic style of the court was beginning to become less and less, we will still see the Gaelic influence all the way to modern day Scotland. So don't worry, the Gaelic influence isn't going anywhere. What an adventure we've had today, retracing the steps of Alexander I of Scotland. We delved into the depths of his early life, his ascension to the throne, and his lasting legacy. We also embarked on the journey through Scotland's foreign relations under Alexander, his diplomacy, alliances, and rivalries with the powerful entities like England and the other European powers. We obviously touched upon the Scottish culture towards an Anglo-Norman court and reflection of the broader changes sweeping across medieval Europe at the time. In our quest to understand Alexander's place in history, we explored a spectrum of perspective offered by historians across the centuries. Now, I must address the elephant in the room. The break from this podcast, I offer my deepest apologies for these unexpected hiatus over these past 5 months. It was a period of personal introspection, a time to recharge my energies and refine the passion I have for bringing Scotland's history to you. I am grateful for your understanding, patience and continued support during this time. Your dedication fuels this podcast, and for that, I am sincerely grateful. The emails I received, the reviews I looked at, people just messaging me out of the blue asking where this podcast has gone. You all mean a lot. You really have kept this podcast going during the years. And to be honest, it's not something I'm looking to stop doing in the future. And this is really down to your guys' support. So thank you for that. Now, our journey through the tapestry of Scotland's history is far from over. We're just getting warmed up. In our next episode, we'll dive into the life and reign of David I, Alexander's younger brother. His era, known as the Davidonian Revolution, saw radical societal and religious transformations, creating ripples that would touch every corner of Scottish society. And after David I, we'll journey forward, meeting the Scottish kings who helped shape the country in the centuries that followed. We'll explore the reigns of Malcolm IV, William I, the tribulations of the Great Cause, and the ascension of John Balliol to the throne. We'll traverse through the times of Robert the Bruce and his son David II, painting a fuller picture of the path leading up to the infamous invasion of Edward I during Robert the Bruce's reign. As we look towards the horizon, we can see the storm clouds of Edward's invasion gathering. His brutal campaign against Scotland sparked dramatic conflicts, left legends of heroism and defiance, and further shaped the destiny of Scotland. But that's for the coming episodes, and a promise of a thrilling exploration of this critical period. Now, remember, our podcast comes out weekly with a maximum of 3 episodes a month. Join us on Twitter at thehistoryofsc1, that is at thehistoryofsc1, or join our Facebook page, The History of Scotland Podcast. Your feedback on the podcast platforms helps shape our future episodes, so please, if you've got any feedback, send them over. The History of Scotland podcast is now available on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts and Podbean. Your support makes this exploration of Scotland's history possible. If you can leave a review on those platforms as well, I can start maybe reading some of these reviews out at the start of the episode. Anyway, thank you for joining me today as we navigated through the reign of Alexander I. The journey forward is teeming with rich history, compelling narratives and a transformative moments that defined Scotland. So, until we meet again next week, have a great week. I'll catch you all on the next episode. Peace, guys.